The following is a recording of the first primary debate among the three U.S. Senate candidates competing for the California Green Party primary nomination, challenging incumbent Dianne Feinstein in November 2006. Tulare County's registered Greens were mailed notification in advance of the event. The specific purpose of the forum, held in Visalia on Saturday, May 13, 2006, was to help the local membership decide on which candidate, if any, to endorse. However, the broader benefits of the event will be the public exposure of the candidates and their views, not to mention the boost in morale given to the local party organization. Paper ballots were cast immediately following the debate. The format gave a rare opportunity to four of the local Green County Council candidates to ask one question each, to be answered in turn by each U.S. Senate candidate within a three-minute time limit. Unfortunately, there were technical difficulties experienced during this audio recording, which prevented recovery of the introduction and the first two questions and answers. The recording therefore begins with the third question. My name's Don Manro, and I drafted this question with the idea that the state candidates would also be participating, but I think you'll see where the issues mesh, so I'll just read it like I wrote it. As a result of Prop 13, California's infrastructure is decaying. Our state's once effective educational system is in a shambles. Traffic fines have skyrocketed to supplement depleted state coffers. Proposition 13's treatment of commercial property is the single largest gaping hole in our tax system. Commercial landowners have gotten an enormous windfall from Proposition 13, leading to the dramatic underfunding of California's public services. Within the past 15 years, even Prop 13 supporters like Republican Assemblyman Bill Leonard from San Bernardino County have advocated for proposals such as a split roll that could boost business property taxes by $1 billion a year, shifting the tax burden back toward equity from the strapped homeowners back onto business. I want to ask you state legislator hopefuls to tell us what you intend to do about it. But first, I have this related question for the federal candidates. You would think that our members of Congress would prioritize their efforts to compensate for our shrinking state revenues with increased federal funding, but they have diverted money from domestic programs to regime change and so-called nation building in OPEC countries, overseas, and in Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. Do you U.S. Senate candidates have any coherent plan to remedy our revenue woes?
In 3 minutes. Well,
this is Tian Harder.
That's a good question. With regards to Prop 13, you know, when you sign up to run for office, you have to swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of California. And this is rather daunting because the Constitution of California resembles a phone book. You know, I mean, the only part of the Constitution of the U.S. you really have to pay a lot of attention to is the Bill of Rights, and that you can memorize in two sittings. And you know, and that whole like to me, the solution boils down to value engineering the role of money. Because one of the reasons the corporations have the Prop 13 tax break is that they don't die the way normal people do, you know? It's a company can be bought and sold and it doesn't look like it died. So they buy a piece of property and 30 years later they're still running the joint and the homeowners have moved on 20 years ago, and that's one of the ways the property values bite homeowners worse than they bite corporations. So maybe if they adjusted the law so that when corporations change owners, it was like they died. If they were people, that would level the playing field a bit. But really, you know, my hope is in the nothings that we share is word of mouth, you know, because like the only thing Hollywood cares about is what people see on the silver screen, you know, and the only thing local government cares about is what comes in through like sales tax revenue and property tax. And somehow, if we could make public discussion a government utility that's like free and worth listening to, then maybe we can get out from the federal government's thumb. That's my hope.
That was Tian Harder. This is Todd Cretine.
Thanks, Tian. First on Prop 13, it is a disaster for the state of California, and it must be radically reformed. I think a very simple proposal would be, depending on what numbers you want to use, you could place a $250,000 or a $500,000 cap on both private and commercial real estate, and then revalue to increase the tax revenues when properties change hands, and that would bring in billions of dollars for the state. So that's on the state side of it. On the federal side, again, we have a crime being perpetrated against our children. Everybody here know what the federal education budget is? It's about $70 billion. You know what the Pentagon budget this year is? It's $550 billion. My proposal is to switch those two numbers. And here's what you can do. With $70 billion, we still have the largest military in the world, spending more than twice as much as China on its military. So for $70 billion, we still have a huge behemoth of a military. But with the $550 billion we dedicate towards education, here's what we do. Listen to these numbers. For $70 billion, we can hire 1.5 million public school teachers at $50,000 a year, benefits and salary. That would double the number of public school teachers in the United States. We could also build 10,000 schools and build them and make them sort of a Marshall Plan of sustainable energy and creative construction, not only to employ hundreds of thousands of people, but to put to use the most advanced technologies in terms of sustainable energy and renewable resources. And then lastly, we could give every graduating senior in the country every year, we could give them a full scholarship, a four-year full scholarship to the public university of their choice. That is a program for flooding our communities with education and with hope, with eliminating unemployment, and I think would not only give us a way to implement and put into use many of the sustainable energy forms that we already know about, but would also show the world that our country does not value bombing their country over the future of our children. And I think that is a plan that would not only reduce hatred against our country, but would give the world a hope, not only for our future, but for the future of the entire world.
That was Todd Cretine. This is Kent Messplay.
Wouldn't you like to have our National Guard back? I mean, it belongs to our state, right? One of my key issues is physical security, increasing our physical security, talking about regional development in such a way that when push comes to shove and we have either terroristic activity or natural disasters, such as those that are more increasingly prevalent due to global climate change, that we are more able to meet those threats at the ground level. I would like us to not think that the federal government should bail us out with federal tax dollars. I look at the energy situation thusly. If we picture how we use energy as coming out of a bucket, we have a bucket that is incredibly leaky. If you look at this building, in this building, easily 70 to 80% of the energy that's used here is wasted. So one way to improve the budget here in California, to have more money to work with, is actually to start investing more strongly in sustainable design. Architects are going to play an increasing role in promoting safety and security when green buildings are designed. These issues tie together. Healthcare is tied together with the ground level security that a society has when there is a catastrophe, because if the survivors are not able to take care of themselves during a major event, more people can die from the after effects, from disease, from vectors. than during the initial event. So as far as the money goes, one of the best ways to solve money across the country is to work toward national energy independence, and certainly here in California to work toward state energy independence based upon renewable energy. So as far as military transformation goes, we can talk more about that. There may be an opportunity for me to say that I like what I hear Todd say about how the Pentagon budget, if used more appropriately, could do much good. But as far as a public relations issue goes for the Green Party, I think we need to talk about phasing things in. And but I do like the point that he made. It really creates a good picture. So again, renewable energy, independence at all levels, including state independence with energy. Thank you.
Now, Rob Osak has a question about regional development. I guess I get to read it. And Marilyn Davies also has a question. I know her question was going to be about Iraq. How in the hell did we get out yesterday, and what are you going to do about it if elected, basically? But I'll read Rob Osak's question. He's out getting some materials. What should the role of federal government be in regional planning? Should there be commissions formed to coordinate actions for regional issues of importance that span across state boundaries? Should there be federal input or veto capability on state projects where there is a high degree of incompatibility between nature and feasibility built environment of human living? That is, should we be allowed to build water-thirsty environments in the desert, such as Las Vegas, Palm Springs? Should we be able to retest our luck with New Orleans, given the tragic potential? Should we be able to replace the San Joaquin Valley's prime farmland with vast tracts of housing? In other words, should there be a federal check on the state and local activities in order to apply wisdom to our country's urban growth? And how would such a system be established without additionally bringing in excesses of bureaucratic red tape or federal encroachment on states and individual rights?
Todd Coutine.
That's an excellent question, and I think that there is no way. I mean, coming from Oakland, California, and working in San Francisco, I mean, just the incredible waste which is involved with a few million people trying to drive from Tracy or Sacramento to downtown San Francisco and back every day is just mind-boggling. And really, you can see that our infrastructure is crumbling under the weight. And it's crumbling under the weight of the hyper-highway system and the almost exclusive use of private cars to the detriment of the public transportation system. I take BART almost every day, and BART almost doesn't go anywhere. It goes from a few isolated suburbs to downtown San Francisco. I try to take the train up. We were talking, Tian and I were talking about the train the other day, trying to go to Sacramento to San Francisco. It comes like once an hour, and it doesn't actually get you to where you need to go, so you need to take a car to get there anyway, and then take a bus once you get there. And the transportation between Southern California and Northern California is even more of a mess. So that's just one issue in terms of planning, the need for some type of statewide planning. There's other issues in terms of the agriculture and the housing, but housing, the way we're building it right now in California, is completely unsustainable. And there must be some type of vision of how do we relate the suburbs to the cities and vice versa. I think that the farmland is being, as people said, the farmland is being rapidly destroyed and replaced with endless tract housing. And I think that this cannot be solved on a county-by-county level, because back to Proposition 13, all of the counties and the cities are desperate for new real estate development because it's one way that they can get some revenues, which they're being starved from by the state and by the federal government. So all of that's to say is that I don't think these things can be handled piecemeal, which doesn't mean you need one central person making all the decisions, but we do need to have a movement and a new environmentally sustainable ethic, which says that we must have a vision of where we're going to be 20 or 30 years from now. What's the relationship between new housing, between our public transportation system, between agriculture, between business, and between education and healthcare? And all of those things have to be considered simultaneously. And if you don't, then you leave yourself without any idea of where you're going. So I just say specifically about transportation, I think that this is one of those issues, where it's not rocket science. I mean, it's actually, Kent's not quite a rocket scientist, but he's a scientist, and he knows a lot of stuff about this, so people should listen to what he says. But a lot of this stuff is pretty simple. Like, I used to live in New York City, and the trains there actually go everywhere. They run all night, and they're $1.50. And so by actually putting money into the trains, people take them much more often than they do in the Bay Area. So if we cut the BART price in half, and if we made twice as many stops and we built light rail to crisscross it, then I think that we could double or triple BART ridership if we gave it a sustained effort over the course of 5 or 10 years. But that will only happen if we take the auto industry and the oil industry out of control of our federal and state governments.
Thank you, Todd.
Kent Mesplay.
I do believe that the free market can solve many of our problems, but we really don't even have that here. We have a federal government that pre-selects winners and losers, such as the petroleum industry, having outrageous tax breaks, being funded both explicitly and implicitly. Our wars, as Todd had said earlier, and as Tian well knows, are in part over petroleum. So one thing I will do as a candidate leading up to the fall debates and including in the fall debates is I will speak out as to how these complex issues are intertwined. I will talk about how we do need affordable housing, but we can't have housing that displaces farmland. How we do need farmland, but we don't need farmland that is increasingly distant from where people live. It would be better if in all regions of California, more food were grown locally. San Diego has a lot of small farms. Those farms are fast disappearing. One of the sectors, one of the areas that I inspect in my sector is Valley Center. And I've enjoyed the open space out there and the farmland. And during the few years that I've had Escondido and Valley Center to inspect, that farmland has been disappearing. Not having food grown locally is a security issue. Not having adequate housing is a very basic security issue, affordable housing. We do need to increase our density of housing, working toward more dense habitation, but that which is respectful of the diversity that's there, not just having an entity come in and bulldoze everything and get rid of the culture that's there, but to be able to live and work within pretty much the same place and to grow food locally is really a strength of California. And when we do that, we have more money available in the local economies when we move towards sustainable design. Thank you.
That was Kent Mesplay. Tian Harder?
Yeah, that was a rough question, and I've been thinking about it. And I wanted to get back to a couple of basic principles. And for me, what that boils down to is the American dream.
Tian Harder.
My great-great-great-grandfather was from Indiana, and I wanted to find out something about Indiana, so I was reading history about the place. And I found out that the Hoosiers define the American dream as a shared national vision that makes practical sense at a local level. I mean, that's what it was way back when, you know? This idea that the American dream is all about suburban sprawl and a chicken in every pot, that's nothing but politicians pandering to, you know, Tyson's Chicken and General Motors, you know? It's the American dream could fit just as well, you know, if everybody had a 10-acre woodlot that they hunted, they grew stuff in and they, like, got the wood for the fireplace out of. It's just a matter of what do we want, you know? And to me, that's a political issue. I remember in the mid to late 90s sometime, I read a story about Las Vegas that said they were going to run out of water in 10 years, you know? And that means soon, you know. So, and if some city like Las Vegas runs out of water, then that'll be a major lesson to about the evils of sprawl that even American developers can't bribe their way around. But, yeah, and suburban sprawl is not the answer. You know, we need density along transit. I live in Mountain View, California, and I'm proud to be in a city that most of the development lately has been like 47 units an acre near the train station. You know, the mayor takes media from all over the planet, all over North America around, and shows them the three-story apartment buildings and townhouses that he's so proud of. You know, we're trying to set an example for a better way to do it. And they still build places in Tracy. And, you know, I can't fathom the mindset that makes people willing to commute that far every day. I try to commute half an hour and I can't stand it. You know, I end up quitting my job because I just don't want to drive that much. We need a paradigm shift, but it's like it has to start with better citizenship. You know, as long as city councils are composed of people that developers pay for, and that's the only people that move up to state office and federal office. You know, the reason we went to Iraq is because the oil companies paid good money for the Republican Party. And what we need to do is make being a good citizen more meaningful than being a good consumer. That's the path that I see hope in.
That was T.N. Harder.
Well, since we're flexible and fluid, we have our congressional candidate for this 21st Congressional District in the audience here, and I'd like for him to ask a question, and perhaps, since we have some time, maybe each of you could ask him a question, and then we can give the federal candidates all time, right? Let's try that.
Which way do I stand?
This way. John Miller.
This way. Yes, my name is John Miller. My name is John Miller, and I am the local congressional candidate for the 21st District. I've been listening to your answers, and they all seem very good so far, and there's so many different questions to ask. But that is a specific question that I want to ask as far as energy. What are your plans to take us off this oil addiction? Here locally in the Valley, we have such bad air quality, and part of that's due to the dairy industry and just our own demographic area and geographical setting. However, the other problem specifically with the Valley, they are expecting a possible 10 million additional people in this Valley area in the next 10 to 20 years. And we cannot handle that many people with the air quality, the water, and the rest. So it ties into land use and the rest. But I want to specifically know, what are your proposals to take us off this oil addiction and how to get our energy? Thank you.
Kent Mesplay.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. My plan to take us off our oil addiction is to point out that which George Bush did not really say when he alluded to, when he mentioned oil addiction. Addictions can cause people to do very bad things. For example, like go to war keep methodologies, keep technologies like the internal combustion engine that ought to be let go the way of the dinosaur. What we really need to, and with air quality, I've got several ideas. I want to mention this. As far as building goes, building codes. When we change our building codes to be more reflective of our desire to survive, to continue to live in a manner that is pleasant and comfortable, what we'll do is change our way of life. But people at large need to hear this. They need to see it modeled. And the way to do that is to support alternative candidates. Tian had mentioned the need for a paradigm shift. One thing that we are doing within the Green Party is we are working toward having publicly financed campaigns, getting the money entirely out of politics so that real solutions can be presented. I heard Ralph Nader say once in person that democracy is the best way that we have of solving problems. So we need more democracy so that we have more people such as those here to talk about how it makes good economic sense to move the state toward energy independence based upon solar energy, based upon wind power, based upon fuel cells, based upon biomass. I inspect sites where landfill emits methane. That is controlled. It's not just let escape to the atmosphere. It's not just burned off in flares everywhere, but it's actually tapped, used in generators to generate electricity. We need that sort of closed cycle systems approach to how we design our societies and how we live. One thing that I wanted to mention as far as air quality goes, it's not just the dust outside, it's not just the traffic and the fumes, it's also what's within our living space. Most people don't realize that much of what they have in their homes is highly toxic and it's not really regulated. So part of, I think, our job as candidates, all of us here in the room, is to help educate the public as to what they can do to live more healthful lives, to not pollute as much. But really, it takes decision makers saying, no, every new building ought to meet the highest green standards. And if contractors don't like it, they need to go to school and learn how to do it. There's money savings in it for everyone. Thank you. It's not much time to answer these things.
This is Tian Harder.
So your question was, how are we going to move away from being oil addicts? Well, the theme of my campaign is we need to take personal responsibility for being part of the solution. So, you know, every chance I get, I say we need to stop voting for oil companies at the gas pump. You know, it's I draw a lot of inspiration from San Francisco, where they have a critical mass ride once a month, and a lot of the key, like, urban planning people, you know, go to it every now and then, and there's a radical bicycling tradition in that town that, you know, they don't. It's like the only city in California that doesn't have a freeway running right through it. You know, it kind of follows the shore and goes across the bay. If you want to go north, you have to take city streets. And the reason is because the local citizens fought the freeways. And, you know, if the rest of us were fighting freeways as well as they were, we'd have a better grassroots sustainable society. But learning how to fight when you grew up in a suburb, that's a major learning curve. And I'm still figuring it out myself, you know. But that old thing, think globally, act locally, I think when you intersect that with, you know, the American dream is a shared national vision that makes practical sense at the local level. The overlap between these two ideas is where the win-win starts, you know? So when Bush came to San Jose last month or very early this month, we unwelcomed him because, you know, we want ungovernment from Washington, you know? It's kind of, the UN is like, I've been telling people for a couple of years what we need is an unconspiracy, you know? So we've been adding un on the front of stuff. And And I don't know if the UN will get anything out of it, but it's fun.
Well, I think what Ken said about oil addiction, I think it was a very good starting place, and so I'll just endorse his remarks. And then maybe just move on to add a couple things about how we get there. Because one of the problems we face is you can't disassociate poverty and class and race in the United States from good technical ideas about building codes. Because part of it comes down to, for instance, I would prefer to drive a hybrid car because it would get better gas mileage. Personally, I'd save money. I think there's tax breaks, and you get to go through the carpool lanes for free. That's all very nice. Why don't I drive a hybrid car? Well, I can't buy one. I have an old car, which I drove down here, which gets really bad gas mileage and is not very clean because it's the only car I can afford. And most people in California don't drive hybrid cars for pretty much that same reason. Never mind that the auto companies aren't that into building them, but even once they start getting built, new cars, just plain old new cars with a decent miles per gallon, if you just replaced all the old cars from the 70s and 80s on the road today with a new car, not even a hybrid, but we would get maybe 50% better gas mileage. The reason that doesn't happen through the free market is because people cannot afford to go out and buy their own new cars. And so I think what we have to say is that if we want this stuff to change, it's important for people to take personal responsibility in whatever way they can. I totally agree with that. But if we want to confront the real powers that be in this country, and keep in mind that the oil companies are not in power accidentally, or the auto companies are not in power accidentally. They control the government, and it will take a tremendous battle to get them to relent any of their control. It will mean throwing out the entire Congress and replacing it with progressive candidates who are not beholden to campaign contributions but are beholden to social movements. And if we don't eliminate poverty in the United States, then I think we have very grim perspective or prospects of eliminating environmental damage as well. I think the two go hand in hand.
That was Todd Cretin.
I didn't exactly misspoke. We were 2 minutes till 4, and we were going to start voting at 4. I suggest that we start voting at 4:15, since we're not really all that much of a crowd. We did mail to every registered Green in the county, and we are – so this is going to be the Greens assembled in Tulare County do hereby endorse. It's because we did advertise, and this is the purpose of this meeting. So we're going to do it that way. But meanwhile, since why don't we take 12 minutes and let each one of these candidates ask John, our congressional candidate, and let him have 2 minutes instead of 3 minutes to answer, and that'll probably get us right to time. What you're going to do is you're going to come up to this piece of paper, write your first choice, second choice, third choice, put it in the envelope, write your name on the envelope. We'll have a decision probably in no time at all.
Let's go from right to left. Let's go from right to left.
Right.
Well, who's on the right?
I'll go first.
Okay. Okay. This will be
Todd Cretin.
As they say, a softball question. But I think that what we've been talking about here today is not only about these issues, but we all recognize that these issues in our political system today cannot be disassociated from the fact that we have two political parties that don't care about the solutions we have to these. So my question for John is, as a congressional candidate, what do you think the route to the Green Party becoming a more powerful and larger party in California is? Because I think that that's one of the solutions to all these problems. So how do we grow the Green Party?
Okay. Thank you for that question. My view toward that is to look at so many people who are dissatisfied right now with the two-party system. Here in Tulare County, it's my understanding that at least 15% of the registered voters are declined to state or independent voters. You add to the fact that at least one-third of the eligible voters who are eligible to vote have not even registered. I also think that as far as the Green Party, we have a golden opportunity with the immigrants' rights movement right now and the Hispanic movement in California. Last week, I was up in the MAPA endorsement in Fresno, and in part, I guess the head of MAPA in the state now is a Green Party member. I think we should let the Hispanic population know here, look, we are here for social justice. We are here for your children. We are here for the future. And basically, I think the Green Party should be latching on to part of this movement says, look, we are the party of the people out here that needs the help with the cars, that needs the help with the schooling, with the rest. I really think that we should take not an appeasement view, even toward the war, even though that's a touchy thing, but we need to say, look, we are a true alternative to the two-party system that is out there, because it is, I guess, a coin or a term from Rush Limbaugh, is Republicrat. And that's the system that we are facing right now. Yes, everybody will give you this old problem that says, yes, but if you're voting green, you're throwing away your vote. It's like, wait a minute. You know, in this area, a Democratic vote is not very powerful either. You might as well vote for true convictions here. And we should make it known on a statewide level, too, that says, look, give it a true alternative to this. No, not all the Republicans are bad, not all the Democrats are bad. But if you really want to address these bigger issues, we need to be saying we are a true alternative to what's going on right now. Thank you.
I agree. We are the only viable alternative. But the question that I have is, how do we get the word out? How do we get more, say, press here, more coverage? How do we reach those people, the Hispanics who can really help grow our party? I'm all for MAPA. I met Nativo Lopez. I admire him. I think he's doing a great job, and what Todd is doing is great. This is the year that we can all be very proud to be Greens, and that we can see our party grow, and that people will see that we're on the ballot, and that alone, I think, is helpful. So my question is, how do we work toward getting that publicity?
Okay, the first step I would say to that is we're here, and obviously we sent out 600 mailers, and not so many people showed up here, but at least they got some information out. I think mailers is one way at least people know that we are out here. However, more specifically, to get the Hispanic group out here, it's a different group of people that we need to advertise to. Within this area, I've pointed out that many of these people go shop at what they call El Remate, or the swap meets. They can have 10,000 people there on a weekend just buying things. They talk to each other. We need voter registration at these areas that are where the people are at. We also need to go ahead and hit very big the Hispanic media. There is plenty. You listen in this area, most of the radio stations are Spanish. Okay, there are a few Spanish newspapers. There are getting to be more and more Spanish television stations. We've got at least three or four networks. The Green Party needs to be working together with some of these, the television, but mainly the radio. Air America, I think, is a great opportunity. We finally got it in Fresno, along with KFCF. The others here is very good. I like NPR. But we need to hit radio and part of this, too, because that's a significant portion of the population. I also think the Green Party ought to be working with some of the other third-party candidacies, not just candidacies, but groups. The Libertarians are fed up. You know, everybody who's registered third-party is fed up. Right now, we're the only ones with candidates right now, for the most part. There's a few. So we should be working through those other parties, says, hey, we're here, independents, we're here. But really, we should be looking at the Hispanic media and looking at the areas where they gather, because there are plenty of events out there. Every time there's these markets, the marches were one good thing, there will be more. But we need to be looking things in Spanish and doing more things in Spanish. But not to neglect the core base of the environmental, because we really need to get back to some of those too and say, look, environmental groups that are out there, this is why the Green Party was here. There's Sierra Club, there's the others. This is why the Green Party was first started. We need to get into that. And you know, just aside here, I think we even have a chance even on some farm groups, and they say green environmentalists is horrible, but if you get in there about the farmland preservation, there was a group called American Farmland Trust that have been doing some things. If they truly are concerned about ag preservation, need to talk about local land use and things like that. So there are movements within that, the land conservancy movement and all that. So I really think we need to be hitting into some of these national bases, such as Move On, such as League of Conservation Voters, and, you know, I looked at it. I get the John Kerry stuff back and forth, and I just said, my goodness, he supported eight people out there that he's saying out there, and they raised $25 million in, like, 3 days. I'm like, ah! You know, there are these big groups through the Internet. The Internet's a really powerful tool. So there's many ways. What's that?
You left your name off that list?
Off of the what? The Kerry list? I didn't send him money, but, okay. So, anyways. Thank you.
This
is Tian Harder.
I always tend to, when I look at politicians, the first thing I look at is their name, you know, and I always think, you know, Miller is unusual because in the California congressional delegation, there's a Republican Miller and there's a Democrat Miller. And you're obviously neither of those. But I was just curious, like, what does the name Miller mean to you?
I actually have thought about this one from teaching college. I'm proud of my name. However, I really don't know how I got it, other than my parents got it. The explanation to that is that my great-grandparents immigrated from Russia. And it's still rather unclear what their name was when they came here or before they came here. The story that we were given was they were Russian Germans, and they came here, and as they came over on the boat, they took the name of one of their sponsors or one of their friends that were Miller. However, I have done some looking, and I've found out my great-great-grandmother's name, but not my great-grandfather's. And part of that, there were Millers in Russia. There were Russian Millers. There were German-Russian Millers. So there could have been a Miller or a Mueller or the rest. I am proud of the name because of the fact that it's a fairly common name. And a Miller, I teach kindergarten. We've got the little red hen story, okay? And the hen has to take her grain to get milled. And I tell people that around here, too. Well, the miller's the one who takes the grain and turns it into the bread and the flour and the rest of this. So my name, I'm proud of it. It's a common name, you know. But where it came from, my family now for 100 years has used Miller. It may have been that way in Russia. It may have been Mueller. It may have been, who knows. But there's plenty of people named Miller. I've got friends that are named Miller. There's good people. There's bad people. It's like anything. So thank you. Thank you.
People who run the Green Party usually have working schedules. Matthew Rick, our candidate for state senate, has arrived. So I'd like to say, so the state candidates are present. I'm running for the assembly. Matthew Rick's running for the state senate. You know, we do have some strong opinions about the San Joaquin, this area being the second most polluted area in the entire United States. We have a lot of strong opinions about what to do about it, and a lot of strong opinions about the criminalization of everything. We both have strong opinions about that. Also, we have Larry Mullen from Fresno, who would like to make a quick announcement, and then I want everyone to be sure to just cast your ballot as you leave. Could yes.
Can we make like a one-minute closing statement?
Been thinking of that.
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea.
Do you want Larry to make a quick announcement?
Sure. But let's make Larry make a quick announcement, because you have 6 minutes to make your closing statements. That's after the announcement?
Very short.
Okay.
Very short, yeah.
Larry, thank you. Well, Fresno County Greens, thank you for allowing us to come and putting this on. But on the odd months, we do a video. So number one candidate is... thank you to Tulare Greens for putting this on. Fresno County Greens on the odd numbered months does a video. And you're welcome to give me any literature you want me to take back, and I'll hand that out. Also, all Tulare County Greens are invited to come. We're however long, 45 minutes up the road, odd numbered months. We try to show a progressive video and have a little discussion afterwards. So that's another thing. I also have a petition on minimum wage. If you haven't signed that and you'd like to, I have one for Tulare Kings and Fresno County. Also, nobody is very outspoken about the how to give you guys money. And having been a candidate for 19th Congressional District, there's pretty important that you tell people to write the check to whomever, what account, and be generous and put down your occupation. So anyway, I thank you all for running.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Todd Coutine.
I wanted to keep these like 2 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Okay, closing statement. So thanks, everybody, again. I really appreciate taking the time on a beautiful Saturday afternoon to come and hear out the candidates. And I think you'll find that there's a lot of agreement amongst these three candidates about the issues and the importance of building the Green Party. And so I just want to close by, and I think somebody said that people, of course, here can rank their choice votes, and we could get none of the above, or we could get all of the above, or we could get any one of these candidates. And nothing against the other two candidates, but the point of being a candidate is that you think you should be the candidate. And the reason I think I should be the candidate is not because of any fundamental philosophical differences with the two other candidates, but I think that I can run the most effective and comprehensive campaign against Dianne Feinstein. I intend to run up and down this state in every county. I have the experience and the base in the anti-war movement. I have been a leader in the anti-death penalty movement in California. On the May 1st Committee for Immigrants' Rights in San Francisco, we put a couple hundred thousand people in the streets. I speak Spanish. I've got the endorsements of Matt Gonzalez, Peter Camejo, Renee Sacedo, Gail McLaughlin, city councilwoman from Richmond, Nativo Lopez, Jess Ganem from the Arab American community, and Pablo Paredes, the Navy anti-war resister. So have both a base and, I believe, an experience that will allow me to get all around this state and really hound Dianne Feinstein, because I believe the only way that she will pay attention to the Green Party is if we make this campaign something she cannot ignore. That will be her campaign plan, is to go underground and pretend that there is no election. The Republicans are putting up a guy named Dick Mountjoy, who is the author of Prop 187. He has no chance at all against her, and the Republican National Committee has said they will spend no money on the race because they believe that Dianne Feinstein cannot be beaten from the right in California. I believe that we can get 1 million votes for peace, and I intend to campaign up and down the state, bringing the anti-war movement to the polls, the immigrants' rights movement, or at least a section of it, to the polls, and I believe that the Green Party can come out of this stronger, because the Green Party has to come out of this stronger. In the last 4 years, the Green Party has lost 20,000 registrants in California. We're down to about 142,000 from a high of 165,000. I think one way to repair those numbers is to get to the youth, get to the Latinos, get to the anti-war movement, and say, you have a horse in this race against Dianne Feinstein. And so for those reasons, again, nothing against the other candidates, who I think are articulate and very good candidates, and we're all going to work together, but for those reasons, I believe that I should be the candidate for the Green Party for the United States Senate. So thanks again for listening to me.
This is Tian Harder.
The soul of my campaign is that I believe that we need to change the way we use energy, and it needs to start from a personal responsibility citizenship kind of level. I think every one of you has heard my little one-minute speech at one time or another. Some of you have heard it too many times. But I really believe that that's the way it has to happen. The way the federal government got the huge tax leverage that it has was it incrementally moved people into higher brackets. When they started the country, the only thing the government got money out of was tariffs on imports and exports. And we've come a long way since then, and I think here in California, we have the most per capita self-government of anyone in the USA. If you go to a place like Virginia, they have a raft of incumbents for every county that has 5,000 people living in it. You know, to my way of thinking, those people are micromanaged. And it's not like that here. I like the way we do things here in California. And I want to see us keep the best of our California spirit. But that's only going to happen if we, you know, take the bull by the horns and don't let the incumbents make us into mindless consumers, you know. So for me, being green is all about, if I can use the opportunities the campaign trail gives me to empower people to think about living close to where they work, to think about riding a bicycle, to think about driving fuel efficiently when they must drive, I will have spread a message that's worth hearing. You know, the win-win in green politics is the money you don't spend for gasoline, you get to keep for something else. And I want, you know, more people to do something else. And so a vote for me is a vote for a discussion about the way we use energy. So please, don't be foolish.
This is Kent Mesplay.
Okay, if that's how it's going to be. Now that I know that there were mailings, I appreciate the effort that's gone into organizing here in Tulare County, and I do want to thank you for inviting us. I do intend to be the candidate. We did not have an opportunity to give opening statements. Just as a point of process, it is very helpful to candidates to be able to say who they are and why they're running. Otherwise, we feel somewhat like outsiders for much of the time that we're sitting here. I have not yet sought endorsements, but I am certain that I can get high-level endorsements, including from Jared Diamond, who is a family friend, the noted author of the book Collapse. When I participated in the presidential debates at Harvard, I made the comment that I could not design a society that is more prone to collapse than the United States if I had really tried. So one thing that I wanted to say right away is that I am running to improve our security. California is one of the strongest economies, not just in the country, but worldwide. We can lead the nation. We can lead the world in sustainable design. Now that we have a governor who sees the value in photovoltaics, we can tap into that. These are green issues. It's like everything's just sitting there and waiting to be run with. I have flirted with socialism myself. I was attracted to the Green Party because, in addition to our advocacy of plants and animals, we are the party with a social justice agenda. I have to say that. But we also have to recognize the society in which we live and work, and I am the candidate to reach out to those who are professionals, those who are PhDs, those who are scientists, and those who are moderate Republicans. I don't just want to place or show in this horse race. I want to win, and I know that we can win with celebrity endorsement, with a highly public campaign. I do work full-time. I've been campaigning on weekends, and my website should be finalized within 3 days. I've been working on that, too. I do have a base. I mentioned I haven't been seeking endorsements, but people keep asking me, Kent, when are you going to have more of a presence? Well, this is part of it, and this is the first green senatorial debate, certainly in California and perhaps even nationwide, and it really is an honor to be here. I have some yellow half-page flyers with contact information, and the checks would go to Mess Play for Senate. Thank you.
Well, I think it's easy to say that whether it's Feinstein or Congressman Nunes or whether it's State Senator Ashburn, who seems to get a violent foot up his mouth every time he tries, or whether it's Bill Mays, who doesn't believe in any government at all, we are the other guys. It's not the Democrats if the Republicans are in office, and it's not the Republicans if the Democrats are in office. We're going to tell the voters that we are the other guys, the Greens. Vote for the Greens. We are the other guys. Okay, let's vote. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.